It's a pledge drive edition of This American Life. All this hour, we are playing favorite stories. I chose this story I want to play you for reasons that I'm going to explain when it's done. It's definitely one of my favorite stories we have ever put onto the radio show. It's about a family. David Wilcox's mom wanted to give a gift to his sister. But his sister is somebody with very particular tastes.
My sister Jenny's five favorite songs are all looped back to back to back on a 90-minute cassette that has been dubbed so many times now, most of the singing sounds like a chipmunk buried beneath a mudslide. It starts off with Jenny's favorite song, The Greatest Love of All by Whitney Houston. Jenny fell in love with it at the height of its popularity 20 years ago, and in the years since then, not a day has gone by when she hasn't listened to it. Billy Joel's The Longest Time follows, along with two songs from the movie The Jungle Book, recorded directly off the TV. It is, unequivocally, the worst mixtape of all time. And lest you think I'm exaggerating, please consider the most recent addition to the tape, recorded by Carly Simon in 1986. I defy you to make it through this song in its entirety even once, let alone the thousands of times the members of my family have. This is the sort of music SWAT teams bring out as a last resort during a hostage standoff. And strangely enough, it's also how my sister makes it from one day to the next. How could somebody listen to this every single day? I mean, you would have to be mentally retarded. Which, it turns out, my sister is. I know how that sounds. I know it's bad to use the R word. But in 1970, when Jenny was born, she was simply, as my parents were informed shortly after her birth, retarded. The official diagnosis was severe and profound, which meant she would never learn to walk, talk, feed, bathe, or dress herself. And the doctors recommended, as they often did back then, that she be sent to live in a state institution. But my parents kept her at home, and while my dad worked, my mom dedicated the rest of her life to teaching Jenny everything she'd never be able to do. Today, Jenny's capable of far more than anyone could have predicted. By that, I mean she can walk, talk, swim, use a fork, recognize colors, and recite the alphabet if you help her along. She went to the same high school I did, and even has a job doing light assembly at an assisted living facility. But at the same time, she's little more than a four-year-old. Life for Jenny is exactly like life for a toddler. Filled with simple pleasures, structured around a set routine in which any day, like the day before, is a good day. Which brings me back to the mixtape. When you meet Jenny, it's one of the first things you find out about. When she's not listening to it, she's talking about it. She carries it around for hours in anticipation, and she's sure you want to listen to it with her. She even used to follow people around the house with it blaring from a Fisher-Price cassette recorder. There have been other fixations throughout Jenny's life, though none as significant as the tape. There was the old Monkees TV show, a British cartoon called Danger Mouse. And you wouldn't believe how excited this stuff makes her. She literally squeals every time it comes on. It's so genuine and sweet that you can't help but be excited for her. It makes you want to give her the next thing she feels this way about. And one time a few years ago, my mom actually made Jenny a video. My parents didn't have a camcorder, so she asked a neighbor to come over to the house and shoot it. And on the video, my mom gives a tour of Jenny's favorite things.
This is the best thing we ever did, because she can put the video in by herself. Okay. And it'll start and play through and rewind and eject and turn off, and she doesn't have to do anything. So I haven't had to watch Jungle Book in a year and a half. Which you have no idea.
2 years before my mom made this, she was diagnosed with lung cancer. By the time they discovered it, it had spread to her lymph nodes, which meant all she could do was start chemotherapy and hope for the best. Remission came and went. The cancer spread to her brain, then to her bones. By the time this was recorded, she had begun hospice care and was coming to terms with the inevitable.
I'll show you her costumes. I think I'm going to take a marker and mark stuff as to whether it's work, play, dress up.
Death isn't something you can explain to Jenny. All she knows is that you're gone, and once you're no longer a part of her day-to-day, her memory fades. My mom used to have this running joke that when she was finally gone, Jenny wouldn't even notice. But at the same time, it wasn't a joke. So she made this tape hoping it would be the sort of thing Jenny would watch every evening after dinner on the TV in her bedroom. The one that starts, plays through, rewinds, and ejects without her having to do anything. My mom spent a lot of time planning this tape, but you wouldn't know that from watching it. She seems nervous and unsure of what to say, like someone had just pulled a camera out on the spot and told her to start talking. Parts of it are completely inaudible. There are these choppy cuts where the tape starts and stops. And because of the chemo, she barely even looks like herself. She's wearing a wig. Her body doesn't look healthy. Her voice doesn't even sound that much like her. If you listen closely, you can hear her try to catch her breath, winded from just walking around the house.
Her dress-up stuff's in here. See, she's got her flat up. How about this for hots and tots? She looks so cute in there. So, and her cheerleader, so she's all fixed up. You know, Billy will have to figure out what to do with it, but he will.
Most of it's just like this. Shots of closets and bedrooms, a tape of my mom not saying what she's really feeling to someone who can't understand it anyway. Instead, she explains Jenny's daily routine to the neighbor who's behind the camera. Then at the end, there's an edit, and suddenly she's sitting on my sister's bed, finally talking directly into the camera, directly to Jenny. It's one of those moments people go over in their heads a million times. The last thing you might ever say to someone you love, where every word is supposed to be eloquent and moving and memorable. But with someone like Jenny, you do exactly what my mom did. You keep it simple, and you tell her what she can understand.
This is your room. You know you're supposed to make your bed up every morning. And that's not going to change. You can come up here and watch your videos as long as you don't do it 24 hours a day. Maybe Daddy will get you a new boombox all your very own. If you'll be good and not want to listen to it all the time. You have to do other things. You have to help Daddy around the house and that kind of thing.
And that's the moment. The one moment where she says what she's feeling. You have to help Daddy around the house. She's going to be gone, and it's just going to be my sister and my dad, and she doesn't know what they're going to do without her. This was my mom's way of telling Jenny that she wasn't abandoning her, a way to be there on demand whenever she was needed. A few weeks after the funeral, my dad put this video on. Jenny didn't even watch it through to the end. Soon it wound up at the bottom of a drawer, sandwiched between the Muppets and Barney the Dinosaur, who my sister also once loved and now is forgotten. And while it's sad to think that she doesn't want to see it, it's a comfort to know she doesn't need to. She doesn't need to hear her voice or remember her face. She doesn't wonder where our mom is or when she's coming back. It's as though mom never existed. And while I'm sure that would break my mom's heart, I'm also sure she would want, as she always did, whatever was best for Jenny. Even if that means she's forgotten. That's the weird advantage to being Jenny. The bigger the change, the less she understands it, and the more she concentrates on what stays the same. While the rest of us struggle with memories, she simply forgets. If only we were all so lucky.
David Wilcox. You know, radio is such an intimate medium. When a story works, this is kind of a grand thing to say, but I think it's true. It makes us feel connected to other people and connected to a part of ourselves, which, you know, depending on how you look at it, is either a small thing or the biggest thing in the world. Our show and other shows, lots of us here on this radio station, we're trying to make stories that do that. If the feelings those kinds of stories create, if those don't feel small to you, help us out. Here's how to pledge.